let me get this straight. If the indictment is... if the indictment is, and I have seen you say this, that crossfire reduces everything, as I said in the intro, to left, right, left, right, left, right, left, right, left.
Stop.
Why do we have to fight?
Why do you argue?
We're in bad shape, fellas.
We need help from the media, and they're hurting us. You're doing theater when you should be doing debate.
You're listening to Under Surveillance, WLEW's biweekly show on popular culture, politics, and the relationship between mass media and public opinion. I'm your host, Kevin Fulham, and every second and fourth Wednesday mornings, I'll be joined by a series of guests as we take a look at everything from the makeup of the Supreme Court to upcoming elections and to how social and political climates impact our view of the future in film and television. Under Surveillance is broadcast on WLEW, a listener-supported community radio. And for more information or to listen to archive shows, visit www.undersurveillance.org. We're in the midst of another campaign season, and today on Under Surveillance, I'll be joined by Robert Thompson for a look back at all sorts of classic television shows and films featuring politicians. The West Wing is what first comes to mind when people think of fictional bureaucrats these days, but we'll look back at everything from Mr. Smith Goes to Washington to legendary President David Palmer of 24 to the big electoral showdown between Rosalind and Baltar on Battlestar Galactica. In addition, we'll also look at how actors have become intertwined with real-life politics over the years. Returning as my guest is Robert Thompson, director of the Center for Television and Popular Culture at Syracuse University. Politics in Hollywood, up next on Under Surveillance. Good morning and welcome to another edition of Under Surveillance here in WLUW. We're in the midst of another presidential campaign year, and so we're talking about Hollywood politicians on the show today, the depictions of politicians throughout the years in film and television. And I'm happy to be joined once again by Robert Thompson, director of the Center for Television and Popular Culture at Syracuse University. Good morning, Bob. Nice to have you back on the show.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So in thinking about the topic for this morning's show, you know, it occurred to me that the worlds of politicians and lawyers seem to share a number of similarities, in my view. From birth, we're constantly bombarded with depictions in the media about how both groups are self-seeking, they're venal, corrupt. But on the other hand, you know, what sorts of characters have made for the great heroes over the years? It's crusading politicians and lawyers. Why do you think we see that dichotomy in film and television, particularly with regards to politicians?
Well, I think there's a couple of reasons. Number one, I think we are very conflicted about our opinion of both of these professions. I think both professions are looked at very suspiciously, downright cynically, by a lot of Americans. And I think the reason many people see lawyers and politicians as venal and self-serving is that they observe that kind of behavior, or what they perceive as that kind of behavior, on a regular basis. So the way politicians have, if you're going to make a heroic politician, generally always that politician is seen as an outsider, not as someone who's part of the political establishment, or even for that matter, that much part of politics, but somehow someone who somehow comes in from the outside. I suppose the perfect example of that would be Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, this almost naive, completely out of the loop character who ends up going to Washington and trying to clean up that mess by being someone on the outside. Even if you look at movies that show presidents or presidential candidates in a positive light, they also tend to be these outside dark horse types that, for one reason or another, accidentally become president. Even Gina Davis's role as the president in that recent TV series Commander in Chief would qualify as that. The president on the West Wing was by no means an outsider, but he certainly wasn't part of the standard political establishment. So if you're going to be a good guy on television or movies and be the president, generally you've got to be somebody who kind of came in from the outside. By the way, that's true of depictions of lawyers. The heroic lawyers tend to be the kind of crusaders against the system as opposed to part of it.
Although even with lawyers, you know, Perry Mason, I mean, he's a traditional defense attorney, right? But he's always the hero of the case in terms of getting his clients off. I think you see maybe more the outsider when you're talking about, say, lawyers, say, going up against the big evil corporate interests, perhaps, maybe.
Right, and it all depends. I mean, one has to look at, in the case of lawyers, there have been so many depictions that there's all kinds of ways in which they can make this profession, which is generally not looked upon very highly. You know, and whenever you see all the surveys of how people think about professions in the real world, at the same time, there's almost always a case in which in these things in which they modern television or film lawyer is distanced from that. Unless we go back to that more innocent time in American entertainment, when you look at lawyers like Perry Mason or Owen Marshall, Counselor at Law, or one of those types, a lot of those were playing at a time before we became so dreadfully cynical about the legal system. And they didn't have to work so hard about, you know, kind of portraying being on the outside. A law firm could be presented in 1960s television as a regular, serious law firm. Now, for us to like the members of a law firm in modern television, more than likely it's some bizarre firm that behaves in completely different ways than anybody else. For example, the law firm on Boston Legal, or Ally McBeal, or The Practice, or any of those shows. Now there's almost this need to distance from orthodoxy in these professions before we can feel comfortable with the characters. What's funny, though, is while we've got hundreds and thousands, for that matter, of examples of movies and television shows that depict lawyers, when it comes to politics and the presidency, I think what's amazing is how little popular culture actually deals with it. I mean, if you compare, and it ought to be exciting. I mean, Washington is filled with drama and soap opera and scandal, and on top of it all, it's not only a matter of life and death, it can be a matter of the nation's future or lack thereof. I mean, nothing could be more potentially dramatic than national politics. Yet, if you look at the number of shows about lawyers or doctors or cops or detectives, they so outnumber in both film and television the programs about Washington as to make the ones about Washington practically disappear. You can count them on a couple sets of hands.
Yeah, why is that? I mean, is it maybe, you know, we see those characters, we see cops and lawyers, and I mean, they seem more like ordinary people, so there's more of that identification factor, or, you know, why do you think that there's that big difference?
You know, I don't know why Hollywood has had such a hard time, or has been so reluctant to regularly go back to the well of national politics. I mean, I suppose to some extent, yeah, cops are more and doctors are more like real people, maybe than the president of the United States. But nothing in entertainment has said that we'll only look at characters that are like real people. Look at all the action heroes who are very, very different than we are, that we tend to identify with, you know, perfectly fine. And it's also not that there's been, you know, a constant failure. I mean, there have been some really successful films and a few successful television shows about this, The West Wing, I suppose, being the kind of magnum opus at this point. But I am mystified as to how infrequently the genre of national politics is used in entertainment. Not that it never is, but it's not nearly as infrequent as the others. And I think we may see a change in that right now we're in the middle of this you know, extraordinary primary season. And people who generally never watched CNN or never watched these kinds of things are really getting into it. I don't know how many kids under the age of 12 I have encountered in the last couple of weeks who are totally into this election season. And we see now how dramatic something like this can be. And I've got to think there are a lot of screenwriters out there for both television and film who are watching this whole thing unfold. And my guess is that we're going to see a lot more West Wing-type programs in development before long after this election season that we're in right now.
I wonder if one of the factors is the rising cynicism. You talked about rising cynicism with regards to the legal profession. And there have been a lot of studies that have been done over the years that talk about how since Vietnam and the Watergate era, certainly the public is much more cynical about politicians. You know, they've grown that way over the last 30 years. And how do you think that might play into public opinion with regards to Hollywood? Do you think it's kind of a chicken or the egg question? You know, we already had those negative opinions of politicians, so Hollywood reinforced them.
Well, I think there's two ways that Hollywood can respond. I mean, absolutely. Lawyers, journalists, and politicians are nearly always on the top of the list of the most despised professions when people are asked in interviews. the same time, we also give a good deal of respect to them as well, and that's maybe part of the whole complex equation. But I think there's two ways in which Hollywood responds to politics in a post-Watergate, post-Vietnam, post-Monica Lewinsky era, where we've really got this really kind of eye-rolling sort of cynicism. And one of those would be to simply jump on that wagon and make comedies that depict federal political leaders as farce. And, of course, we've got two extreme recent examples of this on Comedy Central, where our current president, George Bush, was portrayed in fictional comedies. One in That's My Bush, which didn't last very long, and then in Lil Bush, which was that animated program about Bush and his cabinet when they were little kids. Both of them very much cashing in on that cynicism and all the rest of it for comic effect. The other thing one can do in a time of that extreme cynicism, it would be something like The West Wing did brilliantly, which is if we have nothing but contempt and cynicism towards real federal politics, let's show a utopian federal politics, which would be the, you know, the presidency we all dream we could really have. And that was, of course, the presidency of President Bartlet on The West Wing. Every week that guy would say things and make speeches and make decisions that you only wish real politicians would do. His speeches were so much more inspiring, were so much better written than anything we were hearing by real presidents or real presidential candidates at that point. And I think that's one of the things that made that show so appealing, is that in the end, for all of its attempt at realism, it was a fantasy, pure and simple. It was a parallel universe in which we didn't feel cynical about our politics. And it was a show that also cashed in on the potential excitement of the presidential drama. An entire season went through an election, which was greatly timed for a television series schedule. I'm just surprised we have not seen a lot more of those shows. And when we do see more of them, they tend not to do very well. Gina Davis, an Oscar winner, for heaven's sake. Commander-in-Chief, which had a lot of problems and kept changing staff and everything, but was a pretty competent television show, and it got a good sampling in the beginning, and then people kind of dropped out of it. George C. Scott, another Oscar winner, a big ticket actor, started a comedy called Mr. President that didn't do any business whatsoever. Of course, in that case, it wasn't a very good show. Sally Field, an Oscar winner number three, started as a Supreme Court Justice, in a very good show that lasted less than a season.
A couple notes about The West Wing. I don't know if you're aware that Martin Sheen, who played President Bartlet, was actually recruited by the Democratic Party a few years ago to run for an open Senate seat in Ohio. And he responded, you know, don't confuse celebrity with credibility, and he declined to run. And also, you mentioned the heroism of presidents depicted on television throughout the years. And President David Palmer from the show 24, also extremely popular president. Here's a guy who's strong, resolute, a lot of conviction. And he was assassinated on the program, I think, in the beginning of season 4 or so. And there were a lot of people pouring their hearts out on the web about how they were very distraught and how they actually felt more upset at Palmer's demise than if the real president had been assassinated, which I think was fascinating.
You're right. Yeah, no, that was. And he was very much cut from the same mold as President Bartlet on The West Wing. Like you say, resolute, makes decisions according to his integrity as opposed to the polls and all of that kind of thing that would be so refreshing to see, not to mention that he was handsome and charismatic and all of the rest of it. And, yeah, no, it was when he got assassinated. People who were fans of that show really felt it. I think they're probably, I hope they're being hyperbolic when they say that if the real president was shot. And I think when we saw how the nation responded to the assassination of JFK and the attempted assassination of Ronald Reagan, that, when stuff like that really does happen, it's a lot different than it happening in fiction. But nevertheless, people were upset. As for the blending, if you play one on television, all of a sudden people think you could play one on TV with the Bartlet thing. I think Martin Sheen was right in saying, no, you even shouldn't even be asking me this. I'm an actor. I have never had any political experience short of speaking out and everything. I think he was wrong, though, when he said that thing about don't confuse acting with or celebrity or whatever he said with credibility. That's true. There's a lot of celebrities who have got very little credibility. But people had complained that actors, speak out politically. That's what they're supposed to do in a democratic republic. We're not supposed to only have to hear from professional politicians. I think the reason people resent actors is that when they speak out, which they should be doing, any citizen should be saying what they think politically, what makes people mad is when they speak out, everybody pays attention. When your barber speaks out or when your electrician speaks out, they don't get any attention. Celebrities, by definition, when they say something, people pay attention. But to some extent, the fact that there are celebrities who are voicing political opinions should be something we admire, whether we agree with them or not. And let's face it, the job description of what it means to be a celebrity and the job description of being a political leader certainly have some things that don't overlap. They have an awful lot that do, which is why we have people like Ronald Reagan and Arnold Schwarzenegger who have gone relatively effortlessly from one of those professions to the other. A politician, just like an actor, has to be able to communicate in a way that's at least a little compelling to his or her constituency. They've got to be able to hit a mark. They've got to be able to perform. They've got to be able to be on all the time when they're out in public. I mean, a lot of things, skills that big celebrities acquire are ones that come in very handy if you're a political leader as well.
I think that was one of the surprising things about Fred Thompson's candidacy, that here you had this longtime character actor, very commanding presence on screen, and he didn't seem to have any of that charisma when he would make stump speeches.
Right. It is interesting, and we see that a lot in things that don't translate. My favorite, and Fred Thompson is one, on fictional screen, he really worked. He just did not seem to be able to turn in the same kind of performances when he was not, on the set kind of thing. Another interesting case would be Al Gore, who was just absolutely, he was the favorite of stand-up comics to talk about his wooden, terrible delivery. The presidential debates that he engaged in were just, I think, hideous. As was the other side that was debating as well. I mean, they were really not very rhetorically sound. He discovered his medium, though, first of all in the PowerPoint speech and then in the movie he made based on that. And the Al Gore we see in An Inconvenient Truth is a completely different ball game than the one we saw on the campaign trail. It's as though he kind of found his medium. And by the way, if I were a presidential candidate, I'm surprised we have not seen more of that in this cycle. The first time I saw An Inconvenient Truth, a huge light bulb would have gone on over my head, and I would have said, this is how political campaigns are going to be run. We're still now, talking from podiums, shouting at the top of our lungs. I mean, a lot of campaigning and speaking is going on in the same technological mode as it went on during the era of Lincoln, of Cicero, for that matter. Podiums, speaking to live audiences and stuff. I think this idea that I think presidential candidates might do well to make movies. And I'm not saying The Terminator and Action Adventures, but to take a leaf from the book of Gore and use the high technologies that film allow to get your point across. Gore made sense. He was convincing. You almost felt like signing up when you were done watching that movie in a way that he never did in a podium speech or even an MTV town hall meeting.
And I think you're thinking about what you said there. People laughed at him, but maybe Ross Perot was kind of on the right track back in 92, at least with the idea of saying, okay, let me buy up all this time. I'll have these 30-minute infomercials. I'll try to explain my point of view here. He had lots of crazy charts, of course, and it was not nearly as strong in production values as something like An Inconvenient Truth. But perhaps on the right track as far as actually getting his point across to the American public.
I'm really glad you brought him up, because in a very strange sort of way, Ross Perot, with his ancient, stodgy little easel boards that he was putting up, was in fact way ahead of his time, because as ancient as those little boards and diagrams were, they were higher tech than anybody else was using. At least he was using boards and diagrams, and at least he was trying to bring some kind of multimedia presence to things. And you're right, he did it with the long-form commercials. Of course, he wasn't the first candidate to do that, but he didn't just look at a camera and talk. There was a couple other things. He was slouching towards the potential of maybe in the 20th and 21st century, we might use some of the inventions that have come around in the last 100 years towards communicating a message. Teachers do it. Anybody else trying to communicate do it. It's amazing how politics has really not, forget catching up with the high-tech era of all these fancy things you can do. They haven't caught up to the era of PowerPoint. I mean, sure, they use the Internet to distribute their commercials and everything, but, and I think Perot, yeah, you're right, in an odd sort of way, Perot was closer to feeling out that future than most other candidates, even though what he did seemed so old-fashioned.
My name is Kevin Fulham, and you're listening to Under Surveillance here on WLEW, and my guest is Bob Thompson, director of the Center for Television and Popular Culture at Syracuse University. And we're talking about Hollywood politicians, how politicians have been depicted in the media, in film and television throughout the years. And we're just talking about An Inconvenient Truth and Ross Perot and Al Gore and their way of kind of getting across their political message on television. And you mentioned before political campaigns and the whole season-long presidential race that was featured on The West Wing. And I think Bartlett's opponent was a character played by Alan Alda. And if I can recall, there's actually whatever town Alan Alda was from, the local people were promoting his candidacy, and they had signs everywhere. And, you know, here's a community rallying around a fictional character running for president, which I thought was quite fascinating.
Yeah, and I suppose any good fiction brings you in. I mean, there were Archie Bunker for president bumper stickers popping up for the 1972 election, and even though he was supposed to be a parody of a bigot and a closed-minded, boob, there were a lot of people who sported those bumper stickers that were dead serious about it. I was related to one of them. My grandfather really thought Archie Bunker would make a good president.
I did not know that. In terms of celebrities, I mean, you had Howard Stern ran for governor of New York State back in '94 as a libertarian, but I think the number of celebrities involved in politics. I mean, here Archie Bunker's a fictional character, but if you talk about celebrities, certainly that number is rising. But in terms of campaigns, can you think of other examples of how television has best captured that process? You know, just this past year on HBO's fantastic show The Wire. They took you through the mechanics of this mayoral race in the city of Baltimore. And can you think of other recent examples or even older examples of just great television political campaigns?
The Wire would have been the immediate one I would have brought up. I mean, that was, as they've done in all of their seasons, an extraordinary look at kind of the inner workings of various American institutions through the eyes of these characters on the show. I think The West Wing was another one that did an interesting portrayal of that. Before that, I mean, if we go too far back, movies have a hard time going through an entire campaign because they've got to start and stop at in 2 hours. And before the 1980s, most TV series weren't continual serials. You got out of the daytime soap, every episode was independent, which made that hard. But one other example I'll give, which I think is underappreciated, was Tanner 88. This was one of the first, not the first, but one of the first times that HBO got into series television. It had done a few shows before that, but this was their first really good series. And check out the pedigree. It was produced and written and occasionally directed by Robert Altman, one of the greatest film auteurs in the history of American cinema, and Gary Trudeau, the great political cartoonist, creator of Doonesbury. And this whole thing followed a Democratic primary, and they shot it in the actual locations that the primary was happening, so that we had our fictional character interacting in the same locations, sometimes with the actual real candidates during this primary, which was for the 1988 election, and some of these people actually ended up having speaking lines. It was an extraordinary piece of work. Bravo did a think it was Bravo, did an update on it and showed the reruns not long ago. But I think probably maybe of all of those we've mentioned, that was the most kind of really down in the trenches. Then, of course, in the 60s, there were a lot of great nonfiction documentaries about this. A documentary called Primary did a really nice job of following a campaign.
You mentioned Robert Altman being involved at Tanner 88, and he was also the director of a film called Nashville that came out in the mid-70s.
Right.
And with Nashville, though, the presidential race was kind of a backdrop, right, for the whole story?
That's right, yeah. You're right. This is territory that he clearly was interested in. He was a guy, by the way, that had started in television, directing a lot of military shows like Combat and a couple of westerns, I think, before he moved in to do things like Nashville and McCabe and Mrs. Miller and MASH and all of those things, and then moved back to television with Tanner 88. If anybody gets a chance, though, that one's well taken a look at, though. It's very dated, but it's still really interesting.
I definitely have to check that out. Also, you know, a while back on the show, we talked about Battlestar Galactica and the update of that series and how it's been just an incredibly well-done show over the last few years. And they actually had this presidential campaign and election on the show. Here you have this alien society. They're in outer space, just a fleet of ships, and they ran their campaign much like the United States of America would. And there's even all sorts of allegations with regards to ballot fraud, and you had presidential debates. And it was fascinating to see that in an outer space setting.
Yeah, as I was watching that, I was thinking, oh, no, we're going to get to the edges of the universe and still have hanging chads. Learn nothing. But, yeah, it is, and I think in many ways those outer space settings are – it was why Star Trek could do things that nobody – I mean, remember, back when the original Star Trek played in the late 60s, network television was pretty good at doing news coverage during the news, but in prime time they basically were ignoring all of these enormous issues, the Cold War and civil rights and all the rest of it, in favor of talking horses and genies and witches and all of that kind of stuff. And Star Trek was one of the few shows that was actually dealing with those contemporary issues every single episode, almost. And it was because they could be disguised in outer space. Now, Battlestar Galactica, of course, doesn't have to disguise it. We're not in that era that TV is afraid of dealing with issues. But still, the distance of those kind of microcosms of, Starfleets and stuff like that allows one, I think, to put a perspective on it and also distance it enough from the real election that you don't have people getting angry about it because they think it's, some people didn't like West Wing because they thought it was, Democratic propaganda.
For Bob Thompson, I'm Kevin Fulham, and the conclusion of our discussion on Hollywood's depiction of politicians will be aired in 2 weeks. On Wednesday, March 12th. For more information or to access archived shows, essays, and transcripts, visit www.undersurveillance.org. That's www.undersurveillance.org.